Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another fantastic edition of the Booksat Podcast. This week we are joined by a very special guest and the first member of the 213 Hoops crew to grace the Clipset Podcast. We are joined by Cole Huff. Cole, thank you so much for coming on.
I'm honored. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we talk about Lucas every week, but I refuse to have him on because basically then it would just be me listening to him instead of me stealing his points.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that with me. I'm not very long-winded, so you won't have that issue.
Well, we're long-winded enough for you. So a really awesome week of Clippers basketball, right? I mean, just like really great vibes all around. I feel like this is going to be a super positive and upbeat episode. For those of you who don't listen to the show, what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of break down the last week. And what we're going to start with is a positive takeaway from the last week. It might be a little difficult, but Cole, what's your number one positive takeaway from the last week?
All right. If anything, I think that the defense is trending up. I mean, they kind of had a wake up call after that New Orleans game. Mm-hmm. During prime time, of course, because, you know, when the Clippers playing from national TV, they suck and everybody has all these takes. But yeah, it was a little bit of a wake up call. Ty Lue wasn't very happy after that game. Kawhi mm-hmm. had some quotes after the game. So to give up, I think it was 99 points in that first Dallas game. And then, yeah, you know, the last game, they ended up giving up 105, but some of that was in garbage time. No, I think that the defense played really well, and I don't think that's a coincidence that, you know, it came with Ivica Zubac being in the starting lineup and playing a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if there's one positive, I think that that's it.
I agree with you. That's actually my positive takeaway. Sorry to jump in on that, Brian, but I just so happen to have the same positive takeaway. I think two straight games of defensive intensity is pretty great, and I think to differentiate – having one game at least of Kawhi being all caps Kawhi defensively mm-hmm. In that first Dallas game, you know, in that fourth quarter was pretty great to see, just to kind of see that still exists. Cause I think we've been so used to shuffles Kawhi mm-hmm. that finally being able to see that means like, okay, maybe that is still in there and maybe we can count on that to kind of come back out. So I agree. The defense was great. I probably would play harder on defense too. If Ty Lue, who's very polite, had cursed twice an oppressor after one of our defensive efforts too. So
yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that my positive takeaway was the defense. I think we're 3-for-3 on the show on this one. I will say though, you guys both brought it up. I think since we've already touched on the defensive effort this last week, I think it was that Pelicans post game that was like a huge, because up until that game, even in some of these really obnoxious losses that the Clippers have had, there's been this like, you know, never too high, never too low. Like, you know, we just got to get better as a team and we got to watch film. And that was the first time I saw like emotion from the Clippers in a post game. Like Ty sat down angry. Like yeah. You could just feel it when he came in and sat down and got in front of the camera. It was like, oh shit. Okay. This is going to be interesting. And like, even as like the questions were being asked, you could see him just kind of like staring off in the distance, like replaying the game, like furious. I've never seen him that angry before. And, you know, as much emotion as you're going to get out of Kawhi, you saw it in him too. And he was like, yeah, we're not consistent. We're not like he was visibly frustrated with everything. And so that to me was massive. And obviously we saw it, you know, translate onto the floor in terms of that defensive effort. It came at the hands of some offense, but it's good that they started to pick up the one thing that we've been harping on this show. It feels like all season is that we know this team could be better defensively. We just haven't seen it, you know, in long enough stretches, and we got two games of it. So if it continues, that's great. And I think that they'll balance everything out on the offensive end. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what other, you're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel looking for other positive takeaways this last week other than the defense.
And there's really no excuse, right? Like aside from injuries, I mean, with all the individual talent that they have on the defensive end, like why haven't they been able to put it together consistently? And, you know, I think some of them need to look in the mirror as well. Like I know Kawhi is pretty visibly upset and, you know, he got kind of vocal after that New Orleans game, but, you know, he picks and chooses his spots. And I think all of them do because they're seasoned vets and they know that they can flip that switch. But I mean, it starts at the top. They have too many good, talented defensive players to not bring it more consistently than they have.
Do you guys, just speaking on the defense, do you want to see them switching a ton, or would you rather see them take on their own personal assignments a little more and switch a little less, because it seems like they like to switch, but you know, we've seen teams when like Reggie's on the floor take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think it just depends on who they're playing, you know, and what kind of personnel they have out on the court. Like the beginning of the second half of the last game, Reggie started to get picked on by Luka. They're hunting him in the pick and roll. And then immediately, you know, I think maybe 4 or 5 minutes into the half, they came in with Batum for Reggie. So then it made a little bit more sense to, you know, you could switch everybody in that situation. Even Zubac has shown that, you know, he can guard the Giannis's and he can guard the Lukas. And I mean, mm-hmm. that you probably don't want him out there on like Dame or somebody a little quicker and a little more twitchy. But I think it's just really personnel driven, both on their end, on defense, and whoever's on the other side of the court.
Yeah, I agree with that. Reggie never played again after that, which I thought was interesting. We were talking about this before, Brian. Just that game was puzzling in some ways in terms of like the Luke Kennard stuff, but also not puzzling in that it kind of felt like we were watching Ty do a practice run for himself for the playoffs, and like he ran a playoff rotation. I mean, we ended up playing 7 guys, really, when you look at the minutes distribution. And so I thought that was interesting. Another thing I wanted to touch on, though, is Cole, you mentioned Zoo in the starting lineup, coincidentally coinciding with the defense being better. Do you think that that's something that should happen more moving forward?
I think it should, just because of the sample size. You know, he was in the great defense that we had last year to start the games. And, you know, it would really tell off, obviously, when they make their subs and Montrez would play his 100 minutes straight or whatever to end the game. Right. But yeah, I think there should. But if he's not going to start, I understand that, especially because, you know, probably some of the reason why Serge is there is to comfort Kawhi, and, you know, maybe they made some promises to him or whatever the reason is that he's there. You know, he's going to get his minutes. But I think if Zoo isn't going to start, he should definitely play more than whatever, like the 20 minutes per game that he's been playing this year or whatever it is. Like, that needs to go way up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think I'm with you, Cole. Like, it starting for me is like whatever. You could start whoever at center. I'm more interested to see who they're going to close games with. And I do kind of think that between the two centers, when they're healthy, it should be Zoo on most nights, just because I feel like, you know, I know that Ibaka has the reputation of being the rim protector, but this season specifically, it feels like he's kind of fallen asleep on the backdoor cuts. And a lot of guys have kind of gone baseline on him without him recognizing it. And you don't see that as much when Zoo's on the floor.
Sure.
And so I think just that presence down low of being aware of that, looking out for that, and taking away some of those easy buckets for teams down the stretch is going to be massive for the Clippers.
I agree with that. So let's move in to our negative takeaway. Only one, guys. What is Cole, what is your negative takeaway from the last week?
It goes with this past week and I guess the last few weeks in general, but obviously the Clippers keep losing, but the guys behind them and the guys in front of them keep winning. So like,
yeah,
very quietly, the Clippers are, I think they're tied in the loss column with like Portland, Denver, maybe Dallas. I don't know. There's someone else in there, but like if they keep playing the way that they've been playing over the past few weeks, which, you know, who knows, they've dealt with injuries, they've had some bad luck, but they're not too far away from slipping into the bottom half of the conference, mm-hmm. At least in terms of the playoff picture. And then, you know, the Lakers are getting a little more separation, the Suns, you know, the Jazz has slipped a little bit, but, you know, they're really, I don't know, they need to be careful of if they care about that stuff, of the standings. So that's my negative takeaway.
Brian. Yeah, I mean, to that point, you know, we're recording this Saturday before the Charlotte game. If they drop the Charlotte game, they're in the sixth seed. And I think a game and a half away from the seventh seed. You know, we could be looking at the greatest play-in team of all time. I mean, you're right. It's been rough. I mean, I'm looking at the last 3 weeks, basically since March started, and there's 2 wins in March so far, mm-hmm. for the Clippers, which is worrisome for sure.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, you know, some of that is that there was the All-Star break in the middle, but regardless, it was the Golden State game and then that Dallas game, which was right after that Pelicans loss. And that's it for this month. So they definitely need to get that turned around.
Well, it's like six games, right? It's like 6 games total. Or is it 7 games?
Uh, Six. Yeah.
Six. Yeah. It feels a little bit more daunting to be like, in 20 days, they've won two games. And it's like, well, they played six. So it's a bad stretch, but not like they're 2-11 since March started. Like it's.
Right.
Two sounds pretty bad though. Now that March.
Yeah. Two does sound bad. Four is rough. Two does sound bad. I do think though, just this is something I wanted to get in here. 16 of the last 25 and 8 of their last 9 have come on the road. So since that 7-game winning streak, they've played 9 games at home and 16 on the road. So if we want to look at like when the struggle started, it's when they had to play on the road for the vast majority of their games. So basically, if you think about it, for like the last 2 months, they haven't really been at home a lot. And I think like 6 of those 9 games came in one stretch. So like they had a 6-game homestand and then everything else, they've just been out on the road. So it's been really, really rough in terms of like their travel schedule for the last couple weeks. So
especially with what we know too about, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like what we know about their situation, like the NBA guys' situation on the road this year, it's like they can't, they can't leave the hotel. They can't do anything. Like it's almost like being in the bubble again. I would assume. And we as well documented how, you know, some of our players struggled with that last year. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't really think of it like that, but them being away from home for so long is probably having an effect on them.
And also the coaches too. The coach, Ty talked about this, I think yesterday, when they were asking about what the toughest part of this season has been, is he's like, I don't have any time with my staff. You know, we go on the road and we're supposed to be getting meals together and talking with each other and having meetings, and we can't do any of that. We just have to be locked in our room waiting for the game. And so I really just wish that people would start talking about the season as though it is just as strange as the bubble, because it's not a regular season. It's a condensed season after a short off season with bubble rules basically every time you're on the road. So I just wish people would stop acting like this is a normal season in how they talk about it, and how there's not anything different in terms of how guys deal with things on the road. I mean, I was looking at it. No one other than maybe the Lakers is good on the road this year. Like everybody's like 500 or worse, or like a couple games over, but no one's like, oh yeah, they're killing teams on the road too. So it's an issue. And I hope it gets addressed because we have 11 of the next 13 at home. So
I was just going to say that home stretch coming up, they have to take advantage of that because we were just saying they're moments away from being the sixth seed. And if you're a team that's struggling on the road, it's not where you want to be going in the playoffs. You want to have that home court advantage as long as you can have it. And so, that actually makes the next couple games a little more serious than I was taking them. So once again, Joseph, you have scared me more than I already was for this team's future.
Yeah, every time I try to come up with something to kind of explain why the team is struggling, you slip farther and farther down into the hole. You're like, there's no way out. We can't fix this. Did you say your negative takeaway already?
No, but mine is actually something that you've planted in my head a couple weeks ago now is the team goes cold when they're tired, and that continues to happen. We saw it in the Dallas game. I know that they played really well defensively to close out the last Dallas game, but they missed everything that they put up. It was a game for everyone who loves 90s basketball, as you would say, Joseph. They put up 89 points, which was a high scoring game for the early 90s. I continue to get worried about how much fatigue affects this team. I understand that it's a context to look at the game in, but it doesn't fill me with any confidence knowing that, we've talked about this, Joseph, you and I were like, we talked about this before recorded, where there are these games where you and I are getting excited, like texting each other, like Kawhi looks like he's got like jetpacks on his feet. He's so fast right now. And then I think Boston was one of those games. And then at the end couldn't hit anything. And it's like, yeah, it's great that you're, a speed demon 16 minutes into the game, but during those last few minutes, you've got no lift left and your jumper's not falling. And so that continued thing is still concerning me. Go ahead, Joseph.
No, just a 4th and 6 after a 6-game roadie. I mean, obviously he was tired at the end of that Boston game, but yes, I understand what you're saying. Sort of jump in with mine. The Clippers may never be healthy for the rest of my life. There is going to be nagging injuries, I think, until I die. And it scares me in the way that the schedule scares you, and like this fatigue thing scares you, Brian. And it scares me to my core, because I feel like for the second year in a row, we might have the right team in the wrong season. I feel like what Brian said last week is how I really feel, Brian Seaman, about how if the season didn't stop, not you, co-host Brian, if the season didn't stop, that the Clippers would have had a better chance of winning a title than they did in the bubble, in terms of just like they were hitting their stride. And if the season just kind of goes the way that it's supposed to, there's probably a better chance of them getting to the finals than not. And I feel like this year, the issues that I had worried about at the beginning, about this being an older, kind of thin team, it was like the right construction for like fixing the issues that happened in the bubble, but for the wrong time. Like a condensed year after a short offseason with a bunch of crazy restrictions and COVID tests and all that stuff doesn't really lend itself to an older roster being able to kind of weather that storm. And so I am worried that like if we had this team last year and the season plays out, I think we all feel a little bit better about our playoff rotation. But this year, because of all the like shitty schedule stuff that they're going to have to deal with, maybe we don't have the right roster buildup to like deal with that, because we're old and injury prone, it seems. And that's really like my negative takeaway from this week, is like we can't get healthy. I mean, Pat's still out. Serge then goes down, and it's like, okay, now we're going to have to play Reggie Jackson and Terrence Mann 30 minutes a night. And of course, that team's not going to be good enough, because those are the two guys that you didn't have in your rotation to start the year. And so that's my biggest worry and like my biggest negative takeaway.
And it's never like when it comes to the Clippers' health over the last 2 years, it's never like a clear cut timetable of how long someone is going to be out. Like, let's say, okay, if Pat got hurt and cool, he's out 3-4 weeks. Okay, now you can kind of plan. Maybe you think about making the trade or bringing someone in or giving someone these minutes and experimenting here or there, but it's always day to day. They might be here, they might not. We're being cautious, it's, you know. And then specifically for guys like Luke Kennard, like, which I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet, but it just messes with minutes. And, you know, from my experience, when you don't know when you're going to play or how long or short your leash is going to be, you might go out there and try to do too much, or you might be extra cautious because you don't want to make a mistake. You want to keep playing. So it's just, I mean, I tie all that back to the injuries. It's just a lot of inconsistencies and uncertainties with this team, which was kind of similar to last year as well. So it's kind of disappointing. But you can't control injuries and people's health. So you kind of just got to roll with the punches.
The timetable thing is so strange, and it's a really good point. It's almost like the medical staff, like it started with like Lukumba Mute's injury, where he got injured, and apparently like the entire medical staff went on like an ayahuasca trip and decided that time is a construct and they were no longer going to be concerned about it anymore. And they're like, dude, we don't believe in time. It's just, we're moment to moment on every injury. And it's frustrating, but you know, this is the Clippers. They love to play everything close to the vest. Now they don't tell us anything. Like, think about the beginning of the season. It was like, Mook is hurt. Mook is hurt. Mook is hurt. Hey, Mook's playing tonight. Right. And that's kind of like what it was, you know? And so, they don't like to tell us anything, but you're right. I'm sure they have an idea of how long these guys are out. They're not telling us anything. Joseph, you had a point, and then I've got a question.
Well, I wanted to have a different discussion, but you launched into this. Okay. I do wonder, this is, you know, part of my like hot take, not take stuff, but I want to have a different discussion before that, but just like, how much longer are we going to allow the Clippers training staff to get away with this? Just not even just like the day-to-day not giving us updates things, but it feels like every time a Clipper gets injured, it's 2.5 weeks longer than it should have been coming up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Luke thing is like the most blatant example of day-to-day for an entire season. And then somehow he disappeared from the face of the earth. Like Luke Mbamute was never to be seen again after playing for the Clippers and their training staff. We're like the opposite of what the Sun training staff was in like the early 2010s or whatever, with like the Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire. They get guys healthy. We make guys have nagging injuries for 6 months. And like, I just don't understand how that hasn't been addressed. That's really my whole thing about it.
Joseph, it feels like you're accusing them of committing murder. Like he was just never heard from ever again. Like this is like the Natalie Wood, Christopher Walken story where they went to Catalina and came back and was like, oh yeah, she died in like a swimming accident at 3 a.m. So let me I want to go back to the other Luke that got brought up.
Yeah.
Luke Kennard. I wonder if this is part of that as well. So, okay. This last Dallas game was like the moment where I was like, okay, I have no idea what in the fuck is happening with Luke Kennard anymore. Because it felt like after the All-Star break, he got some running. He looked really good. I thought that he looked pretty good in the time that he was given. And then we went to this, like, you know, Joseph, you said it was essentially like a 7-man rotation against the second game in Dallas. And he was not seen at all. It's not like he went in for a few minutes, like fucked up a play and then was like, all right, no, we can't afford this anymore. It was like nothing at all. And the only thing I can think of is maybe he's still dealing with some kind of lingering health issue that they're just not telling anybody about. Because other than that, I don't see any reason why Luke would not touch the floor at all in that game. I don't know if you guys have any other thoughts on that. Like, Cole, are you seeing, like, where are you at with Luke Kennard right now? Because I've never been more confused.
Yeah, I don't get why he wouldn't play in a game like that, especially when scoring and shot making was dire. It was really hard to come by. I understand, like, in general, he's been the worst of the 3-4 rotation guards. Like, man has been better. Reggie has been better. Lou's Lou. I mean, when Pat's healthy, of course, Pat. But, you know, sometimes you just need to inject some energy into the game or try something differently. And I think maybe Ty was, like you said, was doing the whole playoff thing with experimentation with the lineups and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. I feel like if there were a game where he could make an impact, that probably would have been the one to give him a shot. And I can't remember. I think it was the Washington game when the team came out really flat. Like, they were just turning the ball over that whole first quarter, couldn't make a shot. And for me, I believe that when you're sitting on that bench and you're observing everything that's going on and how flat the team is, nobody can make a shot. Like, when you get in the game, you're kind of like you're in the YOLO situation. Like, all right, well, I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to do what I got to do. If it don't work, oh, well, nobody else is making shots either. So, and that's usually when people like Luke tend to play the best, when they're, you know, they're not very hesitant and, you know, they can provide something that the team is lacking. So yeah, it was a little bit disappointing. I don't know what's going to happen with him going forward. I guess we'll find out eventually if we ever hear about Pat's timetable or there's a trade or whatever being made. So yeah, that's what I got on Luke.
I have a question. Joseph, are you still clamoring to get Luke in the starting lineup?
I want to see it. I know that Reggie has been so much better than I think anybody anticipated. But I think some of that has fallen off, particularly recently. And I wonder, while Pat is out, if just trying Luke with the starters might not be a better option than what we're doing now. I understand Reggie with the starters has been a great look. If we have this asset kind of sitting there, and I always try to think of him as like a rookie on the last year of his deal instead of a guy we just gave $64 million to, because that hurts when I think about it that way. I wonder if that could unlock sort of some of what he needs right now, because playing on the bench, he doesn't get to do what he was brought here to do because of Lou Williams. And part of me kind of feels like maybe, just maybe, the team is A, protecting him because he's probably not 100%. I think that has to be part of it. And if it's not, then I have some real questions for Ty Lue about what the hell he's doing with the kid. And maybe they're just trying to get him to learn as much from Lou Williams as they can, because Lou Williams has indicated to them that he's going to retire after this year. And so the extension was, okay, you are going to be our Lou piece for the next 3 years. So just learn as much as you can from him, because that's the role you're going to fill next year, even though you're not really going to be able to fill it this year because Lou Williams is here and he's healthy. That's kind of how I like contextualize it, but I'd like to see him get more run. I'd like to see him get 5-10 minutes a game if something isn't working. If Reggie can't play because Reggie's not hitting shots and Reggie's doing dumb Reggie things, then just play Luke Kennard his minutes. It's like you're basically doing the same thing, right? An excellent shooter, who can create his own shots sometimes and can pass the ball a little bit and is a negative defensively. Like, it's the same guy. So just if one isn't working, see if you can get the same thing from the other guy.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going to take us into hot take, not take, because I have an idea kind of based off of that that is associated with my hot take. So I'll go ahead and get started. My hot take is that, like, I'm not sure that this is the year for a Clippers title. I haven't seen enough consistency, health, all of these things that we talk about that is the context in which the Clippers are struggling. It continues, and I just don't see 28 games turning this around so drastically that I'm like, oh, this is, these guys are front runners. I'm not saying they're completely out. I'm losing confidence in a title run this season. And I'm wondering, just off of what you're saying, Joseph, and the idea of, like, you know, this isn't the year for the Clippers, and maybe they start to get that context where it's like, it's a weird year. Fuck it. You know, like, this is, it's been awful. We're going to get back on track to a regular season next year. Everybody should be vaccinated. We should be back to some kind of normalcy for the next season. I wonder if they reach a point where they start to kind of understand that as a franchise and feel that as a franchise and go, all right, let's experiment a little more. Maybe we do put Luke in the starting lineup and see if that gets us something. You know, I wonder if it's, they kind of take their eye off of this year's title a little bit, which is tough because of Kawhi in the offseason. We don't know what he's going to do, but maybe they do get a little more experimental and they go, all right, well, let's start looking to next year. Like, let's see what Luke looks like next to PG, right? Let's see what these different machinations look like that we can get a little more consistency going into the next season. I don't know, like, Cole, I don't know where you're at with, like, the title odds on this team right now, if that's something you could see them doing towards the end of the year. Where are you at with this?
I think they can still win a title or compete for a title this year. But I'm kind of with you, especially, you know, they haven't shown that they can flip that switch and be the team that, you know, they're all praised and cracked up to be. Similar to last year as well, they never asserted themselves as that team. Like, you know, the Bucks and the Lakers and even, you know, I think the Heat at some point, but all those teams throughout the season, they showed that, you know, our elite players are going to be our elite players that are going to carry us. Everyone else is going to fall in line and do their job. Like, the Clippers haven't had that amount of consistency. And, you know, even when they are really good, it just doesn't last for very long. I mean, they had that 7-game win streak, which was great. But, you know, and then the health and safety protocols and injuries and all that stuff. But and then to your point as well, I think that they can experiment and still be in a similar situation that they're in now. Like, they can substitute Luke for Reggie in the starting lineup or whatever it may be and get similar production and maybe even get better production. But planning for the future can also help them in the right now. Like, that's not a move mm-hmm. that's going to set them back, I don't think. Right. So I'd like point. To see some of that.
That's a good point about it not necessarily taking away from title chances this year and right. still set themselves up for the next season. Joseph, where are you at on all that?
I just kind of want more of the tinkering tie we were promised. I kind of yep. feel like we were told that Ty is going to infuriate us because he's going to try too many things. And I think that the injuries and stuff has really made him sort of close his grip on the rotation and trying to squeeze wins out of these things. And I think it's been to the detriment of some of these games. You know, even just this week, like we were talking about with that Dallas game, like, Luke should have seen the floor. Someone else should have seen the floor. There should have been different lineups. He did do the super big lineup, which I was very excited about because I want to see more of that. For that to be the first time that we've seen that is interesting to me because it feels like we should have been seeing more of these things more and more earlier in the season. And we just haven't. And I think it's a direct reaction to, okay, we've had this like 25 game stretch where we're kind of struggling because we can't get healthy. And like, I don't know who I can trust really to give me something night in and night out. So I'm going to ride the guys that have shown it to me 3 out of the last 4 nights instead of, you know, just plugging and playing and trying to figure some other stuff out. So that's kind of where I'm at. I want to see it more too. And I think that I agree with Cole. It's not necessarily going to hurt us now to see if there's something that we can kind of magically unlock by just plugging and playing and trying to figure out who works better with who.
Yeah. I mean, especially after Ty, I think it was before the Milwaukee game, said, you know, I'm okay with losing games in the name of like experimenting and seeing what you have and trying new things. And it feels like we're losing games without doing that, which is,
I was gonna say, they're losing games anyway. So how much could it really hurt?
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Do you have a hot take for us this week?
I guess it's like lukewarm hot. I think there's going to be a trade just given the team's history at the deadline. Like every year they do something to try to improve their team. Pat's health uncertainties, like we don't know what's up with him, if he'll, even if he does come back, like what he's going to look like or how long he's going to be back for. And then, you know, I feel like the front office has a real sense of urgency. I mean, we didn't expect them to just fire Doc the way that they did. You know, they're really invested in the right now. Well, maybe you guys did, I don't know, but they're really invested in the right now. And I think that they're going to explore all options to try not to miss out on this window that they have.
Yeah, I think that's an important point too. The window is very narrow. I mean, theoretically, if you have Kawhi and Paul George, you're going to be kind of in contention. But when you look at the landscape, right, of the Lakers and the Nets and the Bucks, there are other contenders that are out there, and you know, to a lesser degree, the Jazz and the Nuggets, that aren't going anywhere and are probably only going to continue to get better. So, you know, everybody talked about it as like this 2-year window. And I kind of disagree with that, but I also kind of feel like this was their 2-year most open window. Like the window is going to slowly close, I think, as these deals kind of go on. But it's most open, you know, last year and this year in terms of their opportunity. So I do think that the front office is probably going to try to maximize this year as much as they can. I just wonder, and we can talk about this later, I just wonder what the hell is actually out there that's real, that gives them the upgrade that they want, that doesn't also make them a liability somewhere else. I think we should talk about that after we're done with hot take, not take, though. I think we should have like a whole, what is the deal that you think is made that actually makes them better? We could just do that now. Actually,
well, I
don't have to wait. Yeah,
my not take will lend itself to that conversation. So, Joseph, why don't you give us your hot take and we can get into not take?
My hot take is that Jason Powell is the most untouchable man in all of sports. He is the head athletic trainer for the Los Angeles Clippers and has been for the last 20 years. 20 years of Clippers injury history, and that man still has a job now. I don't want to take anybody's job other than Doc Rivers, who I tried to get fired all of last year. But it's really been concerning, all of the things that we've talked about, that the whole training staff hasn't been totally revamped over the span. It feels like it's the same guys, and we continue to run into the same issues. And so my worst fears of the beginning of the season are starting to become true. And I don't like that. That's not a good feeling. So I'd like for them to stop.
So with the training staff, it's a little bit different, I think, in the past couple of years than it's been with him and the rest of the staff, like in past years, where now they're keeping everything really, you know, close to home. Like they're not letting us know about anything. And for as many injuries as the team has had this year and last year, like nobody really suffered a crazy, extremely, you know, keep them out forever type of injury. They're more just like nicks and dings, or maybe they are those injuries. They're just not letting us know. But I feel like, you know, in the Lob City era, Blake would be out for a month. CP would be out for, you know, like there are bigger injuries. So I don't know if that's like a sign that they're taking better care of the players or whatnot, but it feels a little bit different, but it's just really annoying now because they're constant rather than just a one-time thing that, boom, let's scratch them for 3 weeks, let them get healthy, and then, you know, they'll recover and be ready for the rest of the season. Now it's just like it's interrupting the flow of what they have going on. And yeah. I think that's the most frustrating part.
Well, yeah, and it's not just the fact that it's these little things. It's like a little thing happens. Okay, we're going to keep him out for a couple days. Okay, that couple days turns into 2 weeks. Okay, he comes back, he plays 3 games, and then that same player in the same leg, in the same arm, in the same whatever, has another injury. Mm-hmm. Now they're out again for a couple days, and that couple days turns into a couple weeks. And it's like, why can't we just get these guys right? You know what I mean? Like, why can't we just figure out what it is that's going on and strengthen what needs to be strengthened? So that's what's frustrating to me, is it feels like, yeah, it's not major injuries, but it's little injuries that end up taking up major injury time when you look at, over, you know, the entirety of a season.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. Neither of you are wrong about that. It seems to be this just like, I mean, I never really thought about it. So Cole, it's a really good point about how with Lob City, it was like, cool, 3 weeks, and then you don't think about it ever again. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think we're all kind of alluding to Pat here with this conversation, because it seems this knee keeps coming back, which is that, I mean, one of my biggest concerns for the whole season. Let's get into not take. Cole, we're going to start with you. What's your not take?
Yeah, mine's pretty obvious, but Zoo is just better than Surge. And I think we all knew that coming into the season, which is why we expected Surge to be in that six-man role that Trez was in. But it's really been obvious this year. Like, Zoo had a slow start to the season because I think he was trying to get used to playing with Lou and getting used to his role off the bench. But, like, the team is so much better when he's on the court. Just defensively, he creates so many more opportunities with his offensive rebounding, even though they, like, put a knee in his back every time he tries to get a rebound and he flies halfway.
He gets mugged every game. Every game he gets mugged. Yeah.
The refs don't like the Clippers, but I mean, that's a different discussion. But yeah, I just think Zoo is a lot better. I think Serge's potential could be better. Like, if he just let the ball fly, like, just shoot. Like, his game, just based on the evaluation of the film, is a little bit different than in last season. Like, when he was in Toronto, maybe because he had a Kyle Lowry, but he was a lot more in transition, trail threes. Like, when's the last time we saw Serge step into a trail three? Like,
never.
I don't know, man. It's can go on and on. But bottom line is, Zoo is better. Zoo should be playing more. But yeah, that doesn't mean Serge is a bad player. He can't help this team. But Zoo should be way above 20 minutes per game.
Yeah, I agree. I also just real quick want to request that every time you make a good point, we get the doorbell sound.
Yeah,
because that was like perfectly timed as you were making. No, you're good.
No,
as
that was
you were
good.
Making the
we
point,
want
it
more
was
of
like,
it.
Ding.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I like, it's the perfect not take, because Zoo has just been fantastic. And I'm glad that somebody finally said it on the show. Joseph has been trying to trade him for the last like season and a half, and it's been driving me.
Can you not?
Mad.
I don't think he understands that I'm sarcastic, because I am the president of the Ivica Zubac fan club. Okay. The president. I love that guy.
All right. Well, Mr. President, what's your not take?
That the Clippers are just not good enough if they have to dip into the back of their bench in the playoffs, which is a possibility because of how terrible the schedule is the rest of the way. So we keep worrying about these nagging injuries. Yeah, we play 11 of the next 13 at home, which is great. But let me just, I promised Brian I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do it again. So this is the segment we like to call schedule talk. So the Clippers play 30 games in the next 58 days. Including today, after Charlotte, the schedule is a 3-game and 4-night set. Well, that is split between home and the road. And then a 4th game and 6 nights against Philly at home, which then starts another set of 3 games and 4 nights with Milwaukee and Orlando as a back-to-back after Philly. And then Denver as the 4th game and 6 nights after that. Then they have 2 days off, which is great. Then they play the Lakers. Which leads into a regular rest game against Portland, which starts another set of 3 games and 4 nights with Philly and Houston on the back end of that. And a 4th game and 6 nights against Phoenix and Houston. And then a 4th game and 6 nights against Detroit, which starts another set of 3 games and 4 nights with a back-to-back in Indy and Detroit with a 4th game and 6 nights in Philly. Then they have a rest day, and then they have another split 3 games and 4 nights where they play at home against on the road in Portland, and then at home against Memphis with a 4th game and 6 nights against Houston. Then they have some rest days for a couple weeks. It's a pretty nice little respite. And then we end the season with 3 games and 4 nights in Toronto, in Charlotte, in Houston, with a fourth game in six nights against Oklahoma City.
Cool. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us on the Clipside podcast this week.
Just imagine too, like if I think the Clippers are one of like three or four teams that haven't had any games postponed. Like imagine that schedule and then having to throw in like five missed games as well. Like it would just be a nightmare.
Yeah. That's
so I guess
that's,
they're lucky in that regard.
They're lucky in that they're the one of the only teams that have played all their games. And the teams in front of them have actually played less games than them. Some like three, I think the Lakers only played one less game. But so like you kind of hope that the schedule gets to them in this second half. But at the same time, when you like look at the schedule the Clippers have and have had all year, it's fucking insane. Like it's just fucking insane what they've had to go through this season. When we did the midway check, it was like they've played 12 sets of three games in four nights. And no one else had played 10, you know, among, you know, contenders. So the Jazz had played like six, you know. And so when you start looking at it and you're like, okay, the schedule sucks for everybody. And also the Clippers are the third tenant in their own building. So their schedule sucks even more than the other people's schedule suck because they get third pick of all these games. I am happy, though, that the Lakers today have to play a nooner and we get the Saturday night game, which is pretty great.
Some rough news out of that game as we're recording this is LeBron has twisted his ankle and is not playing the rest of that game.
Oh, that's brutal.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That must really hurt for LeBron to exit the game because I've seen that man's ankle like touches the wood court and he'll just tie his shoe back up and get back on.
He just stares at it and says, "Stop hurting." And it does. And it's the most insane thing I've ever seen.
So yeah, quick recovery to LeBron, hopefully. So I'm gonna jump in with mine here because this is gonna kickstart the larger conversation. My not take is kind of a follow-up on last week's hot take, in which I said it might be time to trade Pat just because of the injury concerns and all of that. But as much as you might be able to fill what Pat does production-wise on the court, I don't think my biggest hesitation about it is that you're not going to replace what he brings the team off the court. And we talked about this last season. We talked about it this season. Like, I do think that Pat is the kind of vocal leader of this team. I've seen him do it in the locker room. Like he's very much the kind of like large voice in the locker room. And let's say that there's a trade that involves Pat where they go and get Lonzo Ball. I don't think Lonzo is going to walk in and be the vocal leader of the LA Clippers. I just don't
LeBron
see it happening.
Might. Not Lonzo though.
Yeah. yeah, for sure. That to me is one of the biggest concerns because one of the biggest positive changes from this season over last season has been the camaraderie and cohesiveness inside the locker room. There hasn't been any like major like headbutts. Like there have been like heated conversations for sure, but that happens on any team. That's just the nature of a competitive sport. But it seems like they've really started to kind of come together as a team. And my biggest fear is if you take away Pat, who I think is a major component of that. Although at shoot around this morning, everybody was praising Batum for being the cool head. So maybe he's the one who's been leading this whole charge of everybody coming together. But you know, I'm afraid of Pat's off-court production not being replaced in a trade like that. And Joseph, I know you wanted to talk more about possible trades and what could happen. But you know, I don't know. I'm so on the fence with Pat more or less because of what he brings off the court than what he brings on the court at this point.
To a certain extent, like he's certainly the leader of the locker room. I'm sure Lou is as well, but Pat is definitely more vocal and he's not afraid to be vocal. So you'd definitely be losing a lot in that aspect that like even if Kyle Lowry came to this team, like he's not gonna have the same hold on the locker room like Pat does.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You mean Kyle Lowry, greatest basketball player and greatest leader of all time, Kyle Lowry, isn't gonna come in here and save the locker room? What are you talking about, Cole?
And man, I'm just speaking from the heart right here. I'm speaking from basketball knowledge, what I think makes sense. But yeah, but then at the same time, like, is that worth like keeping around if he's not gonna have the on-court production that we need, or that he's, you know, he's always hurting stuff? But like, what's the medium? What's the balance between that? Because yeah, he's a great locker room guy. He's the leader of the team. He holds a place in all of our hearts, I'm sure. But like, if that's not carrying over onto the court because he's unavailable, then are you willing to sacrifice that for, you know, something that could help the team win a championship? And I'm not saying that that can't, because when Pat is on the court and he's healthy, he makes a world of difference. But it's just a question of if he'll ever be on the court, you know.
That's fair.
That's the biggest question too, right? Is if he can play, then they are actually good enough on the floor to win a championship, you know, with him in their top eight and starting for them, because the team, I don't remember, I tweeted it, someone can go look it up, but, you know, they're like 15-5 this year when he plays with Kawhi and PG, and they're like 22-6 last year when those three played together. So, you know, their best basketball has come when those three guys have played. And, you know, obviously last year it didn't work as well in terms of leadership, but they're kind of fire and ice, you know, Pat and Lou, that kind of combination has really helped, I think, the locker room this year, especially given, you know, the vets that we have that balance out the rest of it. I just wonder, you know, the hardest part of making a trade is both teams have to say yes, but also if you're going to trade away Pat, you got to make sure that when you're trading something away that you're getting back something that's enough of an upgrade in return, that it's not a bad deal. And if you have to staple another asset in there, you have to make sure that as a whole, what you're giving up isn't more than what you're getting back. And so some of that, if it's, you know, a straight up one for one with Pat and somebody else, you know, in some seconds or whatever, the leadership thing I think matters, especially if the on-court stuff is just going to be kind of similar, you know, if it's just going to be kind of a lateral move. A lot of Pat's on-court stuff is a part of, or is comes from that sort of, not leadership, but like that energy, you know, dolphining to go get an offensive rebound and getting an extra possession. Like, are you really going to find that in somebody else? You know, you might get the shooting and defense somewhere, but those little glue plays, are you going to get the same thing plays from somebody else? Yeah.
I have a quick question for the two of you. So we kind of talked about earlier of how the veteran guys kind of coast, like Kawhi's defense, like he picks and chooses his spots and stuff. Do you think that Pat doesn't know how to go, like to chill, go into chill mode, but like, do you think if he kind of took it a little easier through some of the games, or just, you know, his style of play is so aggressive that maybe he wouldn't be as banged up as he always is? Or is that just how you just think that's how his body is regardless?
I think that could be part of it. I would be curious to see more, like, you know, I know that we joke about this on the show all the time, but like there was like the running in the sand in Tim's, like if that's like a regular like type of workout for Pat, that to me is more concerning than him playing aggressive on the court. Like, I get it, you know, it's a cool moment for social media and all this, but like at some point, like I'm curious, like how insane his workouts really are, and like the ridiculous shit like that he might be doing during them, where it's like one time maybe for the camera, for sure. But like if this is something you're doing all the time, then like, yeah, the knee thing is starting to make a little bit of sense. Yeah.
As someone with bad knees, you would never catch me dead running in the sand in Tim's because of how bad my knees would feel after that. So I think you got a point there, but I do think, you know, I talked about this in the last episode, that if he gets healthy soon, we should just put him on a minutes restriction the rest of the year and put him on the bench, you know, start somebody else, have him on the bench, and just kind of have him get used to that role, just in case that's all that we can get from him. Cause I'd rather have him on the court than not at all. And I think you can close with him, but kind of managing his minutes the rest of the way and making sure that if he can't take the foot off the gas just a little bit, like you don't have to go 100, you can go 90, you know, you can go 85 sometimes. Getting him to where he just makes it across the finish line, I think, is more important than anything else.
Well, a lot of times his foul trouble does that for him. The coaching staff doesn't even need to put a minutes restriction because he'll pick up like two quick fouls in the first quarter, which is like one of my biggest concerns about him in general, is that aggressive. I love the aggressive style when he's hitting the ball. When he's not and he picks up three fouls through, you know, a quarter and a half, that starts.
It's just so unnecessary too. Like half of his fouls, it's like he's just lunging, like he wants that steal so bad. It's like you could just keep him in front. Like you don't have to get the steal this possession, you know. But that's just kind of how he's wired. Like even that was it the Christmas game last year when that the swipe on LeBron is like, bro, like you're insane. But I mean that's part of the reason why he is who he is, and I guess how he's made his mark in the NBA. But it's just like, man, You got to be a little bit more measured, my guy.
Well, I mean, I think he is being measured, because if he wasn't doing that, he'd be biting the person that he's guarding. You know, he would just tackle him to the floor and just start gnawing on him. So I think we can take him swiping at the ball instead of him, you know, viciously attacking somebody.
Yeah, fair.
So I do want to ask one quick question before we get into our final segment. I want to know the one move you would make. So, Cole, I want to start with you. If you were Larry Fizzle Productions, what is the one move that you would make?
I'm sorry, whomst?
Larry Fizzle Productions. Lawrence Frank.
All right.
Come on, dude.
All right.
I'm out.
You're going to be upset at me because you are noted a part of the zoo praise and bandwagon.
All right, thank you so much, everybody, for this week. But
I don't think that they should trade him. But if there's like, I don't know, a Hassan Whiteside or Andre Drummond or like another pretty good backup big becomes available on the buyout market, I would feel better about including Zoo in a package to get, I don't know, like a Oladipo or a, whatever, a good return, not a lateral move, because Zoo is the only guy that's going to get you that you would assume. Pat's old, he's injury prone. Lou said he's going to retire if he's traded. Like, they don't have very many pieces to offer if they do want to make a trade. So Zoo's the sweetener, along with those 10,000 picks. But it all just depends on the buyout market, I think. Like, if they know that they can get someone to replace Zoo, then I think it just makes tons of sense to do that. But until we find out anything regarding that, then of course I would keep Zoo and start him. But that's just me.
Yeah, well, I mean, logistically that makes sense, because that is the piece that is going to get you return. You're right about that. I mean, I don't know. The Lonzo Ball has been talked about a lot. I don't hate it. I'm not sure. His shooting, I don't think, is sustainable, what he's been shooting so far this season, especially when you get into the postseason. And B, I mean, I also haven't watched enough Pelicans this year to have a strong stance on it. But, like, you know, Joseph and I keep saying it, like, the team, more so than like a playmaker, needs somebody that is going to be aggressive on driving and like get inside a little more and get some of those like easier looks, get to the line a little more for this team. And this isn't a like anti-jump shooting take on that at all, which has like been the new discourse on this team, which is fucking weird, because it's 2021 and this is the league that we play in.
You don't agree with Jeff Van Gundy?
I've never once agreed with Jeff Van Gundy. That's just the modern game. You're going to shoot. I'm with Joseph. He brought this point up a long time, like along, I don't know, it was weeks and weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where it was the pace, right? It wasn't shoot less threes, it was have more possessions. And you know, they are such a slow team in the half court that if they picked up the pace a little more, they could still shoot as many threes as they're shooting at the rate that they're shooting them and still get to the line, because they would have more possessions to go inside and take contact, which I don't know. I think you need a sledgehammer, and like, it would have to be like, you would have to hit, I don't know, you would have to kill Paul George to get a call at this point. I don't know. Some point it's going to get so bad that it's going to look like a Gallagher show where they're handing out ponchos to everybody in the front row because the opposing team is just destroying them. And everybody's being sprayed with his blood. I don't know what they have to do at this point, but the point being is I don't know if Lonzo's the guy that's going to get you inside the way that this team needs to right now and kind of answer that. So I don't know who it is. I mean, George Hill has a boot on, he's not getting to the rim. Like, I don't know who's that. Like, the one guy that I was kind of interested in, which is PJ Tucker, is gone.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, I don't know what the answer is at this point. Like, and I think that not knowing what the answer is lends to my original hot take, which is like, I don't know if this is the year for the Clippers. I just don't, I'm not sure who answers the need, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Joseph, do you have somebody in mind?
I mean, the Lonzo stuff is tricky, especially if the trade is Pat and not, you know, some, you know, weird smorgasbord of, you know, 8 second round picks and, you know, Lou, Terrence, and Fee just to get it done. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know why the Pelicans would ever say yes to that. Maybe they just don't want to pay Lonzo, but I don't know. It just, it's kind of a lateral move in terms of like Pat to Lonzo. And then you're losing, like we said, the, all the other intangible stuff that Pat brings. And also Lonzo, in my opinion, doesn't have any wiggle at all. Like the dude has no juice off the bounce. In my opinion, I could be wrong. He could have figured that part out, but just to have another guy to stand in the corner and play some defense, like we probably don't have to trade one of our better players to get that. I don't know. Really what it comes down to is I think that the team needs some more athleticism. I wonder about a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, why he hasn't signed. I wonder if he's hurt. I wonder if he opted out. I don't know what's going on there. But if we could somehow dump Fee and bring in the two triple name guys that are out there, I think that both those guys could be serviceable options in terms of just sort of shoring up our depth. And you would feel a little bit better, I think, when someone goes down, if someone goes down, being like, okay, we have these two proven NBA players sitting on the bench, you know, kind of waiting for us, that can play a little bit better defense and bring a little bit more athleticism than what we have. So that would really be my sort of move, would be just bringing those two guys in if we can create the roster.
Do you think they do make a move, period? Like, do you think they do make a trade?
It's Lawrence Frank. He can't help himself.
Yeah. I think they do, especially given, you know, kind of the two wins this month. I do think that that lights a little more of a fire. And the fact that, like, we're looking at the second season in a row with injury, you know, injuries messing up any consistency on this team, that, yeah, I think they might make it. Even if it's a slight downgrade, it's still somebody that's going to be on the court consistently, might be a bigger priority for them than gambling. Like, well, if this guy is ready for the playoffs and is healthy, we're really good. You know what I mean? Like it, yeah. It's, I do think that Lawrence is going to like roll the dice a little bit, before Thursday's trade deadline.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know how sweet the return is going to be, but I definitely think that they're going to do something. They're fully invested in making the most out of the season, in my opinion. And I don't think they're satisfied with what's going on right now.
Yeah, right. Agreed. Joseph, you want to take us out?
Yes. So we're going to go into our last segment, which is track of the week, a track that has gotten you through this last week, last month, last, you know, year of this hellscape locked in your house. So Cole, if you're ready, we'll start with you. Do you have a track of the week for us?
I do. It's a fairly, I'm sure you know the song. It's fairly like new in my playlist, but it's Everybody Loves the Sunshine. And I don't know how it came about. Like I was watching TV this week, and I think like the Apple commercial like has that song in it. And then like every single show I watch on Netflix that like takes place in LA, it opens with that song. So I like did some research. I'm like, I really hope that this guy is from LA and everybody just doesn't look stupid for including this. So that's the song that I came up with. And it's kind of just like a vibe song. Like I don't always need to have the Kendrick Lamar, the Eminem, like the wordplay and the deeper meaning. Like everybody loves sunshine, which is true. So I just kind of been rolling with that the past week or so.
That was my track of the week a couple weeks ago, actually. So yeah, you're not the first person to have that. I had a couple Roy Harris tracks as my track of the week.
Cole, I'm just going to push back on you saying that everybody loves the sunshine, because as somebody as pale as I am that gets burned when somebody leaves the lights on in the house, the sun is my mortal enemy.
I have no comment on that.
Oh, I thought we were going to round table my sunburns. So my track of the week is a vibe track also. It's from a guy named Rondo. He is a old school Bay Area dude from Oakland. He essentially like was kind of rediscovered on accident. So he was like this local legend in Oakland. He had like a cable access show that was like really bizarre. He essentially was like a pimp in like the 70s in Oakland and cut a couple like 45s for fun. Like he knew some people that had like studio space and all that. And the song is called Didn't I? And he essentially recorded, like was like, fuck it, I'll go record a song. This will be fun. And then that was it. It was like pressed, you know, pretty minimally and was in small circles. And then I can't remember who it might have been. It might have been Madlib. I feel like Stone's Throw was the one who kind of like discovered this 45 and was like, this thing is fucking amazing. And I think maybe Madlib had sampled it and then had repressed his music. So much so that like within the last 10 years, he started playing concerts and like, kind of like that, like somebody like found him and was like, hey dude, you remember those records? Like decades ago, people are listening to them now and you could start playing shows and make money off of it. But I actually think the song was played on an episode of Breaking Bad at one point. So for some reason that's in my head, but,
amazing show.
Yeah, it's yeah. Oh, amazing. But yeah, it's a really good, like mellow soul song. So if you're into like the Delphonics and stuff like that, you would really, really like this song.
What's the guy's name is Rondo. And what's the name of the song?
It's Del Rondo. And the song is called Dead Night, which is actually the name of a Delphonic song also, but it's a different song.
I'm gonna check it out. See if I'm vibing like how you're vibing.
All right. Joseph, what do you got for us?
So this is from an album that was released yesterday. It's this guy, Pink Sifu. The song's called The Divide off his new, album Smoke Break. Just like a super interesting album in terms of like beat wise and like kind of the vibes of each song. I know we keep talking about vibes. I didn't want to use that word, but that's the only word I could think of. but like each song is a little different. There's another one called Oatmeal at the beginning, which is super dope too. But, this one's featuring like 8 people, Fly Anakin, My Guy Z Loopers, which I've tried to get everybody to listen to, from Detroit, Mavi and Concept Jackson. Anyway, the song The Divide is really, really great. Z Loopers opens it and is weird and fun and Z Loopery on it. But it's just a great track. And there's a lot of really interesting hip hop going on right now. If you kind of dig through sort of the underbelly of all that stuff. So yeah, everybody should go listen to it. It's a great, great song.
It's all about the vibes, Joseph.
It's all about vibes.
Don't be shy about it. It's all about the vibes.
The Clippers' whole season has been like, no players, just vibes.
Just vibes, strictly vibes.
Oh man, can we make that a T-shirt? No players, just vibes.
No players, just vibes. Yeah,
the Clippers shirt. Yeah,
I'm behind it all the way.
Awesome. Well, let's put a bow on this, Cole. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. You know, this is definitely not a one-time thing. We're going to get you back on for sure.
For sure.
Take this moment to plug away. Where can people follow you on social media? You know, what are you working on right now at 213? Like the red carpet's yours. Lay it all out for us.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram, even though I'm not really on there much, at Cole Hoops, C-O-L-E, Hoops, like basketball. I don't really know what I'm gonna write about this upcoming week. Hopefully, more positivity. You know, gotta get those vibes right because this past week hasn't been great. And then I want to leave you guys with one thing, so you guys can hate me before I get out of here. I have an additional hot take that the Clippers' gray uniforms are their best uniforms.
Oh my God! I meant to come at you about this. You went about. You said that on Twitter. Uniforms. They're disgusting. What are you talking about?
That's a scorcher.
They're amazing. Hear me out. If you compliment it well, it looks amazing. Like the Bucks the Mavs with those rainforest green disgusting uniforms did not compliment those gray jerseys very well. Like they had a green court. Like where are we? You know, it just didn't look right together. But those gray uniforms, I mean, the Staples Center lights with like some white tights and some white shoes, like not Reggie's yellow and green cakes. Like,
what is going on there?
I have so many questions that revolve around Reggie's appearance. Like the is his shoulder still hurt? Is that why he's still wearing the shirt underneath his jersey? He's got like braids on one side of his head and like twisties and like a mohawk. Like it's just Reggie, but. But yeah, that's my additional hot take. I know you guys don't like it, and a lot of Clippers Twitter hates it. But I'm sticking to it. I'm standing out.
I mean, that's fine. I appreciate the individuality here. I just don't know if like the foundation of a good jersey is having to call the other team and go, "What are you guys wearing tonight?" I'm just curious because I'm thinking about wearing this gray number, and I want to see if it works well.
I'll give you that. That was actually like, for as much as I like those uniforms, like when we were watching that game the other day, I'm like, man, this is not a good look. Like this looks pretty bad.
All right. Well, I am so happy that you ended the show with that because That might have been the hottest take on the entire episode.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, man. We're going to get you back on. We're going to get you inducted into the Double Dip Club. Everybody listening, we appreciate you joining us this week. Thank you for all the support. If you want to keep the show going, completely listener supported, keep the advertisers out of our podcast, you could go to patreon.com/clipsetpod and sign up there. As promised, if you sign up for the Patreon, we will give you a shout out. We had a couple people sign up this last week. So a couple quick shout outs here. Johnny Walker, thank you so much for signing up. Clipset Commander, amazing name. That's got to be one of the greatest names in all of our patrons right there. So shout out to Johnny Walker. Brian Seaman, guest on the last episode, signed up. I don't know why. Brian, grab your money out of the gutter. But thank you so much for signing up. And Stephen Williams, really amazing dude. Thank you so much for your support on, you know, keeping us listener supported. This is for and by Clipper Nation. So if you want to keep that going, you want to shout out on the show, you want to be a part of the movement, patreon.com/clipsetpod. And wherever you're listening, hit subscribe, leave us a rating and review if possible. And remember to always wash, rinse, sanitize, repeat.
And if you don't, Donald Sterling wins.
And that's a fact.